Good morning and welcome to the Pat Kenny Show. For the next hour, we're going to highlight a topic we've been covering for a while on the show. Over 8,500 children living in the Liberties are without a green area for playing sport. And despite constant local campaigning, there's been little or no progress on the issue. Now, we first spoke about the issue with JJ O'Mahony, chairperson of the Sporting Liberties. That was back in December.
The reason it doesn't show much green space on any map is because the policies of the Dublin City Council has been to inject into the area student accommodation, hotels and housing. It's been used as a release valve for the city, right? But completely forgetting about the kids that live there and the consequences that we see. There's clubs like Kevin's who do amazing work in around there, Liberty Saints Rugby, some others. We struggle. And it's almost the club should be called against all odds, because against all odds, these are able to keep some kids going. We have identified two sites, right? I've been at this for over 10 years and some others with me as well.
By the way, I went on Google Maps. I know the area well, but there's nothing like seeing it, if you like, from the air, an aerial view. And you're looking for green and it's hopeless. So where are you going to create green out of what is probably brown field sites at the moment?
Okay, so our issue is that if you go back to the Teresa's Garden sites, which, remember, saved so many lives in the heroin epidemics of the 80s, right? The Dublin City Council marched in and corned off all those fields. They have been sitting there idle for 16 years. I'm frightened to think how many lives could have been saved had those pitches been opened up. How many kids we could have diverted away from crime and drugs. Those pitches now, what we're going to do is that the latest city development plan allows for a playing pitch in Teresa's Gardens. We were in yesterday, as recently as yesterday, and had what I call probably productive but heated discussions with Dublin City Council. They're at a sensitive area. We had long discussions, but there is plans for a playing pitch inside in that area, right? But we need the money's ring fence for those, because we got empty promises previously on those. And the second area, Pat, is Marrowbone Lane. There's a site in Marrowbone Lane that has been used by Dublin Corporation. The waterworks are moving out of there. It's about 11 acres. We've been campaigning for over 8 years, I think, another group.
So that's a yard at the moment used by the waterworks people, in other words, Irish Water, who've taken over all those activities. Where are they going to? Because, it's one. For example, there's great space at Cunningham Road, but we need somewhere to park our buses. The city has got to be served by buses, so you can't just take that and say we'll put a grass on it and it'll be fine.
But I go back to my point. This is the release valve of the city. Everything can't be dumped in here. Every solution can't be pumped in to the southwest end of the city. There's already a depot across the road from that, where the local densely populated area have to suffer from the fumes and all the traffic coming in and out on that. Now is the time to identify that. If the government are serious, so let's say one of the biggest problems in this city is drugs and crime, right? And we have seen this, what's happened in the city recently. If the government are serious and really serious about addressing this problem, let's go to the crux of the matter. Let's go to the crux of the matter, where young children are being taken off the streets by the drug lords, by the crime lords, and they're not even being competed against. They've become a commodity in the area the children have. You go into Marrowbone Lane, if the government are serious, they don't have a swimming pool. Put a swimming pool in there. They have one of the worst education records for going on to third level education in Ireland. Put education in there and put sport in there. Without education, without sport, how do these children really have any chance whatsoever?
Okay, so you've isolated two sides. You say Teresa's Gardens. What's there at the moment? Is it brownfield? Is it a place where there was construction and that's now gone, or what?
Okay. Hines are developing a site in there in conjunction with the Dublin City Council and the LDA. The LDA are putting in 540 houses in there. Now, interestingly, we've been at this for 10 years. The LDA can march in within 3-4 years, get sites, plans in. Again, I'd say the priority of children has dropped. But we have had good, constructive, and I said robust talks in the last few days and yesterday. And Dave Dinnigan, we met yesterday, and his colleagues, Martin and Laura, they've done a lot of work in the area to try and work to see how we can facilitate that. So that can be put in there.
But what's there now?
There is a There's plans. Part of it is...
No, actually, but what is there physically? If I want to see it, what's there?
Okay, part of it is actually sitting green space that I mentioned that sit for 16 years empty. Part of it is the Player Wills building site, and part of it is other storage facilities and buildings that have been
so
there.
So if they had a will to do it and the money to do it, within, it does take time to clear a site and to obviously bring topsoil in and plant a pitch and so on and do it right. But within a year, if they had the will, it could be done.
I believe so. But now there are other, like, it's not a straightforward problem, as I discovered in the last few days as we engage more with Dave Dennigan and his colleagues. Because of the bureaucracy of getting procurement, there's a whole sequence of events which actually, believe it or not, has brought us out to 2027. But I am pleading that with them.
2027? And is this a guarantee? Have they said, by 2027... the kids will have a playing pitch.
Well, this is what they said, but the point I raised yesterday, we've been down this road before in 2017, where we got every sort of commitment of temporary pitches, knocking of buildings, knocking of various structures, and there will be pitches delivered. So now what we're saying following yesterday is money must be immediately ring-fenced for that, because we don't trust the council at this stage. We've lost all confidence in the people on this.
Now, what about the Marylebone Lane site? We were only talking about, you know, two sites in an area that has, at the moment, 8,500 children. There are, as you mentioned, lots of things being built, apartments and houses and so on, which inevitably will produce more children. So that number is likely to go up. So Marylebone Lane, how far away might that realisation be?
So it should be a lot more advanced than where we are, right? So as I said, 8 years we've been knocking at the doors of Dublin City Council. They are reactive rather than proactive on this site. So where we are is that they haven't even come up with drawings, they haven't come up with plans. But what I say, remember, this is a site of 11 acres. 11 acres. We're probably for a football pitch, soccer pitch, and I'm talking multi-sport, GAA, soccer, rugby, boxing, all of those, is that area, we immediately, if there was a will, you could deliver on that site within 18 months.
JJ O'Mahony. Well, after the break, we'll hear from Tom McGee, president of Liberty Saints Rugby Club.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, today we're revisiting our campaign for a playing field for Dublin 8. And following our interview with JJ O'Mahony, we spoke with Tom McGee, president of Liberty Saints Rugby Club, a huge advocate for sport in the local area. And when we spoke to him, he told us the impact the lack of green spaces is having.
Traditionally, as you said, in the Liberties, rugby wouldn't be something you'd see happen any day of the week, but then again, sport in general in the Liberties is something that isn't available to anybody. So rugby will have just as much a chance of taking off as any other sport. But all of our matches are on an away basis. We train in an area the size of two tennis courts at the back of one of the local primary schools, which is really the only green area in the whole of Dublin 8, a community for 8,500 children and 65,000 people. And it's been that way for the last 20 years that I've been in there.
Now, when you're dealing with kids who really have no heritage of any sport, whether it's Gaelic football or hurling or soccer, or I suppose soccer is the easiest thing to kind of kick about on the streets. The other sports require a bit more space, but rugby certainly needs a bit more space. What do you find in those kids? Because unless you grow up with something, you generally just don't know. You've got two left feet, basically.
Two left feet and don't know how to catch a ball.
Yeah.
I've never had PE or chased your pals around the pitch in a positive way. Never owned a pair of football boots. Never got used to mucky knees and cut elbows from positive engagement. So when sport was introduced to these, I suppose when we started off with the rugby and we kind of went into all the schools, it was huge, I suppose, attraction for what we were bringing. But like you said, it wasn't something that was naturally available to them because there's been no sporting facilities in this area for the last 20 years. So their parents wouldn't have played sport. Their uncles and aunties wouldn't have played sport. There wouldn't have been anybody that would have said, come on, we'll bring you down to the we're all from this particular GAA club or this particular rugby club. And you would kind of feed into that the way it would in maybe other areas in Dublin and around Ireland. So when we started doing this, it was a huge, huge attraction for what we were doing for the young people. And they readily took to it.
And would it be apparent in those young kids that they didn't have the kind of coordination that develops through sport?
So rugby in particular, whether you're tall, small, slow, fast, there's a place for you in some yeah. regard. And children at that age, when we were dealing with them, took very quickly to learning new skills or whatever. Where it became more tricky would have been, let's say, with parental involvement, where kids are going home with big mucky tracksuits and early starts on a Saturday morning, and we need to get over to Malahide to play away or something like that. And there's an element of input required from that. That was a little bit tricky because that was something that they had no control over.
I mean, you'd bring them in a bus, I presume, but they have to get up earlier and they have to be got out of the house earlier to make that.
Exactly. And they have to have their gear washed and their gum shield ready and all that type of stuff. And that was something that they probably weren't used to before. But again, there's getting the bus and all the rest of it, there's a resource drain on that because child protection, we have to have a certain amount of adults per children. And a lot of the time there wasn't always readily two parents available that might come in and let's say dad might go with one and our mum might come because there would be other children at home then that would need to be minded.
Could you see in the kids that persisted with this a positive development? I mean, their resilience, their enthusiasm, did you see it grow?
I didn't see it grow. When I say I didn't see it grow, it did grow, definitely grew. But we only see them for the hour or two that we have them on the Saturday morning or a training on the Tuesday or whatever. But we got contacted by teachers, by the local guards, by community people that were saying, oh my God, what has happened to Young? In particular, it was a young guy who was particularly troublesome in school, and they could not believe the change that it had on him. He was no longer acting the fool in class. He no longer had to act out or to be, I suppose, noticed all the time. When he got involved, the impact it had on him, I suppose the teachers were one of the, in one case, a local guard came down and said, I don't know what's happening here, but the young fellas that I've been dealing with for the last 10, 15 years, who are now 13, 14, well, they're now 15 years old, have changed. And they aren't the people that they used to be. And rugby, and certainly the whole discipline and well, first of all, they weren't on the street for as long. They weren't hanging around on a Tuesday and Thursday. They were gone at the weekends. They were up early. They were engaged and they were stimulated by what we were doing.
And there was more crack in doing what you were doing than the alternative on the street.
Yeah. Well, I had no way of comparing that. The same way as I had no way of seeing the impact it had on them until people started coming back to us and reporting that. Until the local teachers were coming down and going, this is really amazing. And there's loads of examples of that. And the alternative to what we were doing on the street, a lot of the time, it's just boredom. That's all they have. And boredom will, a vacuum will be filled by whatever stimulation is available to them. The problem we have is that the general attitude to Dublin 8 as a locality, there are more flats complexes in Dublin 8 than anywhere else in the state. There are more people in Dublin 8 end up in Mountjoy Prison than anywhere else in the state.
Even
the North Inner City. Dublin 8 has the highest young female suicide rate in the country. There are breweries and hospitals, addiction centres, student accommodation. We cater for everybody except for our own children. And that's really what it boils down to. And that's the bit we want to change. So if I had a magic wand, I could magic a pitch there and we could put a swimming pool and we could put a running track around it all. We're in reality here. We're not dealing with magic wands. So we
yeah, but you can create the magic wand if you can get the stakeholders like the city council and the government and the Minister for Sport to say, let this happen.
We've been talking to the Minister for Sport and the stakeholders. We've presented architectural plans. We put in 175 houses and a pitch. We've done all of that. But we're still here 7, maybe 9 years later and nothing has changed. And the amount of young people that are no longer with us, in some cases, some of the guys that were on the team that we had in 2017 are dead. More of them are in addiction and criminality. But that's a common thread that's been running through this area for the last 20 years and beyond.
And those that you've lost, whether they're in addiction, in prison, or who didn't make it, they are dead. The difference between those and the few maybe who benefited from everything you did and have begun to thrive, is there any way of distinguishing what was the difference?
Well, dependent on whether you cruelly want to measure success as being this guy went on to play senior cup rugby and went to college, or this guy.
No, this guy has a job, a life.
Oh, yeah. There are lots of guys on the team did go on to join other clubs and went to college and are successful people. One of them just graduated as from UCD. And then there are other guys that are in Mount Jerome Cemetery.
Tom McGee. After the break, we'll hear from Sienna, a 16-year-old girl from the local area, and we'll speak to Gail, a resident in Oliver Bond Flats.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Welcome back to the Best of the Pat Kenny Show. If you want to get in touch, you can email us at patkenny@newstalk.com. Before the break, we heard about the crying need for sports facilities in the Dublin 8 area, but we wanted to see for ourselves. So in February, we visited the Liberties and we spoke with a teacher from St. Catherine's National School, Karen Jordan, to Sienna, a 16-year-old girl from St. Patrick's Cathedral Choir School, and to Gail, who's a resident of Oliver Bond Flats. Well, I've just entered St. Catherine's National School on Dunor Avenue and I'm being met by Karen Jordan. Karen, hi.
Hi, Pat. How are you?
You are a teacher here at this lovely school.
I'm the principal, yes.
Well, it's a fabulous school so
far.
But tell me about your recreational space. How much do you have?
Very little for the 191 pupils that we have on roll.
They're very quiet at the moment.
They're very, very quiet. They're working hard. We work them very hard. So you can see from the front, it's all tarmac. At the back, it's all tarmac. The joke is sometimes we have more greenery on the roof than we do on the ground. We try our very best, but there's no football pitch. There's nowhere that we can swing a hurl. And the children can just about run in our space.
Okay, well now we'll walk along the corridor here and
sure.
I can peek into the various classrooms.
Very busy classrooms.
They're as good as gold.
They're brilliant.
You run a tight ship here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's fantastic.
So what kind of recreation would the kids like to be involved in and where do they go?
Well, we have good partnerships with soccer clubs, GAA football clubs, Kevin's Hurling and Camogie Club on the Crumlin Road. That's where they have to play. We used to try and do running. When I could run, I ran with the children at lunchtime, but because of construction in the area, it just became really untenable.
So you take to the streets around here?
Yes.
And lead the kids like the Pied Piper?
That's it. Yeah, I like that vision. But that's what we had. And that's all we have.
That's all you had.
So this is another section,
To my left here, not a lot of space there.
No, there's a little bit more space around the back as well. But again, it's all because of, I suppose, the nature of the site we have and the little space we have. There's no green space in this area.
Now, there is something going on because I see here we have helmets.
We do. We do. As I said, we have a good partnership with Kevin's. We try our best in the hall and in a section of the yard that we have on license agreement from a developer next door to teach the skills. But as you can see, no child can actually hit a ball properly because we don't have the facilities.
But under license suggests that that license will someday end.
Absolutely.
And that land will be built upon.
Yes, thousands of apartments, unfortunately.
Loads of pupils for the school, potentially.
Yes, that's potentially.
A silver
potentially.
Line.
And I suppose that will, it's going to mean more children coming into this area and with
no
green
resources.
Spaces and no resources, no recreational resources.
Even when you talk about having to go to the Crumlin Road to play sport.
Yeah.
That's not a stroll away.
No, we have to cross the South Circular Road. We have to walk down the canal to Dolphin's Barn. There are no traffic lights for pedestrians all the way. So we staff and parent volunteers take their own lives and the lives of our children in their hands to walk to the green space that's close
by.
Okay,
so I've seen two spaces, a little space at the front, a little space here.
And
where's the rest of the space?
The rest is around the back.
Let's
used to be known as the dungeon. So out this door here to your left.
Out here, okay.
Yeah. So when I came here in 2003, I was told I was on yard duty in the dungeon. Yeah.
The dungeon. Lead on to the dungeon.
Okay, to the dungeon we go.
So you've prefabs here again to my left.
Our prefabs are actually on what used to be, and you can see the markings, our football pitch.
This is where they used to be able to play.
The tarmac football pitch, yep.
And now revealing around the back of the school
are hundreds of bike racks. Because, you know, we are trying to encourage everybody. We're a green school. We're trying to encourage everybody to travel green, climate change, you name it. But we also, that then also takes up the space for our yard. So we're just coming to the dungeon area.
Okay, the dungeon area is this?
Yeah.
That's all there is?
Yeah.
My goodness, Karen.
This is it, yeah. Now, you can see we have a playhouse. We do try and grow, but that's the growing space.
There's really nothing here. And what's behind out there?
That's the yard on license.
The yard on license. We'll have a quick walk through there and see. But again, this is no permanent solution.
No, absolutely
not. It's going to go.
This is where the children attempt to play football. And you can see the lamp in the middle of it all.
There's a lamp in the middle of it all, so kids could crash into the base there and do themselves some harm.
Huge damage, yeah.
Yeah.
It's long, it's narrow, it's the best we can do, it's the best we can offer. We offer, you know, we think we do great with the space that we have. The children are happy to be here, but there is no green space. You cannot play a proper game of any sport.
And this is for 190 students.
Absolutely.
Hi, Sienna.
Hello.
What school do you go to?
I go to St. Patrick's Cathedral Grammar School.
And how old are you now?
I'm 16.
You've already made your way into Leinster House though, haven't you?
Yeah, I did a few weeks ago.
What was your mission?
Well, I went in to talk about the lack of sports facilities around my area. And I feel like I got my word across very strong, to be honest.
Now, tell me about that. I mean, do you play sport? Can you play sport? Is there a place to play any kind of sport?
I would like to play sport. I feel like growing up I wanted to play sport, but there's not really enough facilities and chances for me to play sport. Especially being like a girl, there's a lot less football teams and stuff around my area to play.
Yeah, but there are no green spaces anyway.
No, there's nowhere. I think the closest is like up in like Dublin 12.
Yeah, which is a bit of a trek.
Yeah.
So you would love to have been involved in sport. Any particular sport?
Well, football, and I'd like to swim. I don't know how to swim, but I think I'd like to learn how to swim.
How many of your friends know how to swim?
Well, in the Dáil we were talking about this, and I'm in a group of 22. There's 22 of us, and only 2 of them can swim.
My goodness.
I know.
Where is the nearest pool?
I couldn't even tell you.
There's no one handy, that's for sure.
Yeah, I actually don't really know.
Yeah, and playing football, many, many girls are playing football now.
Yeah.
And there's no place to pursue that?
No, not close by.
You got your message across, but was anyone listening?
I hope someone was listening. I'm not quite sure if anything's been done, but I hope that eventually it will.
Now, you're coming, believe it or not, towards the end of your school career.
Yeah.
So it's kind of unlikely that anything will be done for you before you leave school.
Yeah. My main point was kind of more for like the next generation. Like I'm going to have a niece in a few weeks and I kind of want her to grow up with the facilities that I don't have. I feel like that would be kind of my main mission.
Do you feel, you know, living where you live, that you're really not looked after by the powers that be?
Not really. I don't feel like... I feel like they know we're there, but they don't really take any action towards us. Like, they don't really care for the people living there. It's more for people who can come down and, like, spend money and stuff, you get me? Rather than the young people in the area.
Mm. So, when you have free time, what do you do?
Well, when I was younger, we kind of used to just like climb into places that we weren't supposed to be because there was never anywhere open. Like there's a football pitch that's locked up at, I'm not even sure, but we used to climb over rather than, because we don't have the key, so we weren't allowed in it.
You weren't allowed in?
No.
But you kind of made your way if you could.
To have a game of football, we had to climb over a big gate to get into it.
One of the problems is if you don't have sport as a thing to do, people get up to other stuff that maybe they shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, you can bring you down the wrong path, really.
Well, Sienna, thank you very much for talking to us.
Thank you for having me.
Gail, where exactly do you live?
I live in Oliver Bont the last 43 years. Now, what are conditions like in Oliver Bond at the moment?
Well, they're extremely bad with dampness and stuff going on, and then the lack of facilities for young people and elderly.
How many children live in Oliver Bond, would you say?
The last time we done a bit of a survey, there was, I think there was over 120 kids under the age of 16. And that's without the ones over the age of 16.
Okay, now the kids, they want to run, they want to play football, they want to, you know, get active.
Yeah.
What do they do?
So there's a small little pitch in Oliver Bond, and it's not fit for purpose because you couldn't even have an under six five-a-side on it. It's that small. So they actually have to get buses and or trains or bikes to go to different areas to play their football because there's no home ground for them. Yeah.
So, people will say, why don't they go to the Phoenix Park? It's not a million miles away.
Yeah.
But for a young kid, it is a million miles away.
Oh, it is a million miles away. Sure. Even within the area, like it's in my flats alone, if you go around the block, it's actually like a different area because everyone knows their own. But yeah, the Phoenix Park even is way too far for these young people. They think they're going down the country. You know?
But you'd also like to be able to keep an eye on them.
Yeah, also.
When they're out and about.
Yeah.
So what do they do, all of these children, when, you know, it's after school or the weekends and they want to let off steam?
Yeah, they just play around flat complexes and then they're getting into trouble because they're hanging around stairwells. And so,
it's a concrete jungle.
Yeah. So if someone is lucky enough to have a car to bring them to other football areas, but for the people that don't have cars, the kids are just left playing out, like, you know.
What would you like to see happen?
This community definitely is lacking in facilities, green space, pitches, swimming pools. So if you look at, if you take, say, Dublin 12 into account, one area has so many pitches, a swimming pool. And then if you look at the inner cities, whether it's south inner city or north inner city, there's none of that facilities. You know, they have loads of land. We don't have loads of land. And we're not even being thought of when a bit of land does come up.
Yeah. A lot of the land is used for commercial purposes. Some of the land is former industrial land and it's earmarked for other things by developers and by the city council. What do you say to them about, you know, your priorities? Which is to have something for the kids.
Our priorities now at the moment is to make sure that there's stuff for children because the antisocial behaviour is getting way out of hand and we need to accommodate people from the cradle to the grave. So at the moment, there's none of that. We don't need any more hotels. We don't need any more student accommodation. And also, we don't need any more services because if you walk out, we have seven gates in Oliver Bond. And if you walk out, each gate in Oliver Bond does a service. Now, there is a need for the service, but there's not a need for them all to be in one little small area of the Liberties.
What kind of service are you talking about?
So there's a drug centre, then there's people that are on drinking. So like you have one gate like is Dublin Simon Community, then there's the Mendo, then you have Merchants Quay, then another gate is Focus Ireland, then you have another wet house up the far end of Thomas Street.
You think that all the individuals around the city who've got problems, that they're being kind of foisted on you.
Yeah, that's what we feel like.
You're just getting more than your share.
All thrown into the inner city, as if we don't have enough problems of our own. So we have to deal with that as well as trying to look after a kid safely and try find positive stuff for them to do.
Now, the council will say that it's, you know, it's built up. It's the inner city. There is no room for parks or whatever. What do you say to them when they use that excuse?
Yeah, they just have to find it. And it'll make their job easier. If there's loads of stuff for children to do, it will make Dublin City Council's job a lot easier because we've loads of community workers that want to go out and lend a hand. All volunteers don't want to be paid. So their job will be less easier while they're getting paid for doing it.
Okay, so they do it with a heart and a half.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. What do the councillors say to you when you talk to them, your local councillors, or do they come near you?
Yeah, the last time we were speaking to them, they were putting a thing forward for the Marrowbone Lane area. So we're hoping now that they're going to back this even more and bring it back to the government. Mm.
The problem is that by the time these things get done, the 12-year-old child is an adult.
Yeah, exactly.
By the time they get it done.
Yeah. Like even myself, when I played football when I was younger for Brother Bernard in Meath Street, our home ground was in Walkinstown. So like back then, because Bernard had a bus, he was able to take a group of girls off. Now, no one really has buses. Now, nobody is really doing it, because the people want facilities in the area so we can have, and especially the girls' teams of sports even is on the rise, and there's nowhere in the area for girls to go.
The voices of National School Principal Karen Jordan, Sienna from St. Patrick's Cathedral Choir School, and Gail from Oliver Bond Flats. Now, despite numerous requests for a representative from Dublin City Council to talk about the issue, none has been forthcoming. But according to Thomas Byrne, the Minister for Sport, who joined us this week, the solution does lie with Dublin City Council.
Clearly, there are constraints in central Dublin. I mean, if there's no area to put a green area, that is obviously a problem, and it can't just be created from buildings. I do know that Dublin City Council have a number of plans, and you've mentioned them. What I would like to do certainly is invite Dublin City Council to apply for funding to implement some of those plans. We've had the Sports Capital programme, which is, we've received the largest number of applications, the largest amount of money sought. That closed last September. Dublin City Council did apply for a number of projects, a relatively small number of projects, I would have said, probably smaller than I would have expected from such a large area. But we will be soon opening the large-scale sports infrastructure fund. Now, I've heard from Dublin City Council, I don't know what they'll prioritise in that, and they will have to prioritise their applications. They have spoken a lot about Dalymount Park, but they would also be able to apply for significant funding for playing facilities under that fund.
The money, you say, might be forthcoming if they apply, but the question is where. They have, the locals who are lobbying have isolated two sites, one at Marrowbone Lane. Dublin City Council said, oh, no, this is a vital piece of their infrastructure for servicing the city. We were up there, we had a look at it. There's a great view from a local sports club right over the area. There seem to be a lot of sheds, a few lampposts that are stored there for, I suppose, replacing those that are damaged and so on. A dozen or so parked cars belonging to presumably employees of the council. There wasn't a lot happening on that space, and yet it's been, you know, vital according to Dublin City Council for its services.
Yeah. That's again, I can't overrule Dublin City Council on that, but I'm quite sure that the local representatives in that area are presumably putting pressure on them to make sure that that's utilised in the best interest of the city, which includes the best interest of children and adults who want to participate in sport. As I understand it, there are sites there that could be developed relatively quickly, particularly in Dunora Avenue.
This is the St. Teresa's Gardens site. Now, there is already a green patch there. We saw it. It is in dereliction now, awaiting the eventual development of the St. Teresa's Gardens site.
As I understand it, that the sporting facilities there can be done separately. Now, again, Dublin City Council will have to take the lead on that. But if they came to us with an application for large-scale sports infrastructure funding, we'll be opening that fund in the coming weeks. I can't give any guarantees over the radio, but clearly we want to make sure that there are more sports facilities in areas where there are none. So I would strongly urge Dublin City Council to examine that.
You see, I think they are wanting to do everything of a piece. In other words, they'll develop the housing and the facilities all at the same time, which would delay the arrival of a sports facility in Dublin 8, maybe up to 2027, 2028, 2029.
Well, my understanding is, just talking to some of my colleagues in Dublin City Council, that there is a possibility of Dublin City Council submitting a planning application for the development of a municipal pitch and changing rooms through the Part 8 planning route, which is more straightforward. And that's,
they apply to themselves for planning permission.
For that project, separate from the rest of the development. And what we would be saying under the Large Scale Infrastructure Fund, it will be a slight change. Like, we won't necessarily require that projects have planning permissions, particularly when they're coming from a local authority, because the local authority presumably has the means to go and get planning permission for these sites. So it is likely that it won't be necessary for them to have planning in place to apply for funding under this. They'd have to show it's deliverable. But the local authority is able to show that these projects are deliverable. So that is something that, again, Dublin City Council will have to consider. They will have to prioritise. The way that fund works is that we ask the local authorities around the country and the national sports governing bodies to prioritise their projects. Which do they want to see developed?
So you say you're throwing it right back in Dublin City Council's court. You're saying, listen, the money will be there. If your application
Pat, I can't approve projects over the radio, and I'm not doing that. Yeah,
sure. But you're saying that if the application comes in, even without planning permission, but with
if it's deliverable,
if it's deliverable,
and if a project comes in from a local authority, there's a certain element of deliverability there already, because a local authority is generally speaking able to do these things. So I would strongly encourage them to do that, but they're going to have to prioritise, and I certainly want to see like we've had, you know, there's a lot of talk about all these major facilities that we need. But what we actually need, and this is in Dublin 8, but it's also up and down the country. And again, I'm not including in a lot of suburban areas too, Pat, where there's a lot of houses built. We need more facilities for kids and adults to play on, to move, to participate. And we certainly want to see that. And they're not as costly, actually, as you think. I mean, these are relatively small projects that achieve a lot of good, and we want to fund them. We have, as I said, we've had applications for €359 million for sports capital. By some distance, that's the largest application ever. And we're currently in discussions with the Department of Public Expenditure to see how we can meet that expectation. So I would expect that this year we will be announcing a lot of grants for sports capital. There are people who have applied last September. Okay. Dublin City Council have applied for about 10 projects, I think, under that. There may be other clubs in the City Council area. But there is an opportunity in the coming weeks to apply under large-scale infrastructure, and that does include these types of facilities. It's now, not just stadiums.
As Minister for Sport, I'm sure you've had to cut the tape on a few facilities around the country since you took over that office. In your experience, how long would it take to develop this? I mean, we're not talking about a big stand like Parc Eguive. Exactly. There might be a small covered area for people to spectate while training is going on and so on and so forth. But in your experience, are we talking about maybe a 2-year project? Is it doable?
Look, I'm not talking about Dublin City Council specifically, but my experience up and down the country is that when communities are given the power and the autonomy to do projects themselves, so like in a typical rural area, the club owns the ground, they get a grant from the government, there's volunteers in there, these projects get done. And quite frankly, through the local authority system, some of it is necessary bureaucracy, of course, through procurement rules and all of that. And we have that, by the way, for the clubs too. But it just seems to take a lot longer with local authorities. And I think we need to prioritise this because, yes, we have to get housing out there. Absolutely. And more than anyone, we want houses built. We have to make sure the facilities are there and to go into areas like Dublin 8 and the suburban commuter belt as well to make sure that we retrofit whatever we need to retrofit.
Yeah, I mean, part of the problem is that they're going apace with housing, be it student housing or be it apartment building in the private sector and some, of course, public private partnerships. But even when I look at some of those, the amount of green space that is now being planned into them is zero. I mean, believe it, I'm sure you're aware of this, but they count the balcony as part of your recreation
space.
This
is a problem. Look, certainly in my own county, I think it's 15% needs to be green space. But the difficulty is no one really gives thought as to what that's used for. So they add up every little patch of grass, which quite frankly, a lot of which...
That is disgusting.
We're thinking
by
about,
the way, do you know there's a roundabout included in one apartment development?
I believe it. And what we've got to do now is really start talking seriously. Do we want a little patch of grass, a tiny one in front of our estate and there'll be maintenance issues for years? Or do we actually want to provide parks and facilities that benefit everybody in the community? And I think there's a real question of urban design. I think urban design is at the heart of all of this, whether it's housing, transport, sporting facilities. How do we design our urban areas for the greater good? And we've got to think a lot more about that.
Okay, now if Dublin City Council does apply for this funding and if it's forthcoming, how quickly, first of all, might a decision be made? I'm not asking you to commit to anything, but typically how long does that process take?
The process for the large scale funds would certainly take less than a year. This is what we hope to do at the moment. It's not quite finalised. We hope to open the applications in the coming weeks. We would hope to give particularly local authorities maybe 2 to 3 months to apply for the funding. Then it takes a relatively short period of time to assess them because these are larger projects. This will not be a club typically. It could be, but generally speaking, it's not an individual club applying. It's local authorities or national bodies of sports organisations. So it typically doesn't take too long. But again, I'm not going to give any promises on that. And there wouldn't be as many applications. Look, the most famous applicant that hasn't applied yet, of course, is not open. Bohemus, Daleman Park, Dublin City Council have been talking about that project. That's the same fund I'm talking about. It's not just stadiums, but the council, this is critical, the council and the sports governing bodies have to prioritise their application. Now, they have to say to the department, this is number one, this is number two, this is number three, etc.
I can anticipate what the council might say. They'd say we are redeveloping St Teresa's Gardens along Dunor Avenue. It will be a construction site for several years. And in terms of health and safety, can we actually allow kids onto a pitch that we might develop in advance while there are diggers going in and out and all the rest of it? What do you say to that kind of caveat? Because health and safety is important, but you know, it's not beyond the wit of man and woman to make things safe.
We've really got to get serious about this. As I said, as I understand it, the council is willing to look at this separately, just talking to colleagues again. I'm not involved in the detail of that, and the government departments would never would be. But if they're willing to do that, if they applied, if they're successful, there's no closing date on the grant. And that's another problem that we can discuss separately. We don't want council sitting on it, but the grant doesn't run out either, which is
a problem because the money is in escrow, if you like, pending it being drawn down.
And we don't want that. However, on the flip side, at least we don't say you have to have it done within 6 months or a year,
yeah,
or
but
you
can
lose
you not
it. You know,
have that use it or lose it.
Yes, I would love that, Pat, to be quite honest with you, because we've had grants out for over 4 years now, and now COVID and construction inflation didn't help them. They're finally getting off the ground, some of those, the previous round of large scale infrastructure. But this is a constant battle now, within the department.
Even if they were to get the St. Teresa's Gardens pitch up and running within, say, let's be ambitious. If they got the money promised within a year, that doesn't mean that they couldn't spend other council funds if they had a will, waiting for the grant to come through with the assumption that it was coming through. Many householders have to do that. They apply for an SEA grant, but they, borrow from the bank or the credit union to put the windows in before the grant actually comes through. So, I mean, they could get going if they had the ambition. They could be smartish about this.
Well, Dublin City Council, above almost all of the local authorities, would have the capacity to do this without even applying for a grant, probably, because the sums involved are not massive compared to building a stadium, for example. So I think that they could do this, I would say, if, again, it's entirely a matter for them as to how they allocate the resources and what grants they apply for.
Some of the questions coming in, the community centre in Dunor Avenue was one of the very few places where kids can play sport. It burned down by accident in 2021, but that centre is still not back up and running. I mean, what do you know anything about?
I don't,
what's going
and that's
there?
A matter for Dublin City Council. They have to do it. Presumably, they're dealing with insurers. But again, if they want to come to our department on sports funding, then look. I mean, we give in the last sports capital and the last large scale infrastructure fund. You're talking about nearly 300 million of money for sporting facilities around the country. The ask in now for sports capital is actually in excess of that. We'll have another ask in terms of large scale. There's massive demand out there, and the government has been responding to it, and we're very serious about this because we want to make sure there's facilities there. Yeah. So I'm happy to meet anybody. I have spoken to colleagues, but we have a system of government here, and local authorities have to take responsibility for this, and we can put pressure on them, but most importantly, we can fund them, and we are in regular contact with the local authorities around the country about the provision of sports facilities, and with the Department of Housing as well. I've had meetings with Darragh O'Brien, try to see how we can expand the possibilities for local authorities making and creating recreational and sporting facilities.
It's funny though that even in we were in one local school, a brilliant school, but the recreational facility they had, Minister, for the kids playing primary school, about the size of this room you're in now. The control room and this room, that's about the size they had to kick a bit of football or do whatever. I mean, it is shocking. And yet there's been, permissions for block after block of apartments. Who will in time create children who need schooling? And we've got student accommodation, we've got hotels, all sorts of developments in Dublin 8. And for recreation, zilch.
Well, I say my door is open for the Dublin City Council to apply for funding to put in the necessary facilities and space that they have.
And that's where we are now, months later and no significant progress, years later for the Dublin 8 community, and the promise of one playing pitch still seems years out of reach. We're going to keep the pressure on with coverage on this show in the hope that one day the whole thing will be resolved.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.